and welcome to Basketball. I'm Sean Woodley.
I'm looking at my Spotify Wrapped year in review. I'm Katie Heindel.
And today's show is brought to you by Rasheed Wallace. We are going to get to the Spotify Wrapped thing in a sec here, Katie. But on this day in 2000 and where the hell is it? 12. Rasheed Wallace shouted our favorite three words from Rasheed Wallace, ball don't lie. Ooh. As he was ejected from a game as he was playing for the New York Knicks. This is a video with 1.3 million views. Frankly, not enough views here. Katie, it's a big anniversary. We got a ball don't lie anniversary. How fantastic is that? I thought we'd burn through them all in the first year of the show.
Is this the inaugural ball don't lie?
I don't know if it's the inaugural ball don't lie. Mm. That is I think that's kind of up for debate as to when that actually took place. Okay. When was the first ball don't lie? This is like Googling when was the first Christmas. but who started ball don't lie? Rasheed Wallace started it. It looks like it started in 2012, which feels late. I don't feel like that's right. That can't be right.
That does feel late.
Yeah, he must have done it when, 2007, when he was on the Pistons still. That was the first time. Flip Saunders was there. Andrew Bogut was involved. We have a little, in Urban Dictionary, there's a full breakdown of the play where it took place. It reads, Andrew Bogut locks arms with Rasheed Wallace and trips over his own feet, prompting a foul call from the referee. Rasheed, that's bullshit, man. Andrew Bogut toes the line, proceeds to miss his first free throw. Rasheed, ball don't lie. Bogut attempts a second free throw, misses again. Rasheed, ball don't lie. Damn it. So it does go back to 2017. However, Rasheed Wallace did shout ball don't lie in 2012 and got ejected for it, which is wild, Katie. Unbelievable stuff. What kind of, like, sad, soft, insecure referee ejects a guy for saying ball don't lie is my question.
Well, this was just bias against Rasheed that he felt throughout his entire career. Because I'm trying to think of what you would yell now. I mean, obviously times have changed a little bit. But honestly, aside from like yelling something very rude at a ref, I don't think you're getting ejected for yelling.
No, not really. You got to have some swears in there. By the way, there are some like characters in this video I'm watching of this technical free throw that Goran Dragic is taking. Sheed shouts ball don't lie after he misses the technical free throw and then finds himself ejected. But we're looking at Luis Scola. We see Goran Dragic, of course. PJ Tucker's in here. Raymond Felton's in here. It's a wild collection of people in this video here, Katie. Alvin Gentry, your new coach of the Sacramento Kings, is on the sidelines as well. It's a nice flashpoint in time here, Katie. An anniversary of Rasheed Wallace. Glad we could talk about it. Let's get back to your Spotify Wrapped, shall we? I'm an Apple boy, so I don't get this every year. And every year I'm compelled to go to Spotify, and I never quite do it. What's your Spotify Wrapped like? I don't even know really what your music tastes are all that much, Katie. We haven't talked about that a ton away from the podcast.
I mean, they're kind of all over the place, but I'd only gotten as far as when it described what my aura was to me, which is like this tealy blue aquamarine. So sure. I don't know what Spotify technology decides the music that I listen to makes my aura, but that's what it decided. I'm trying to think. I passed a slide that had my top genres. What was on there? Soul, hip hop, classic rock, which I guess is just like a lot of maybe AC/DC. Dance pop, which I don't know what dance pop is, and then singer songwriter, which I didn't know was a genre.
And that's just like sad person music, right? Singer songwriter. So you get a little acoustic, some sad lyrics, and boom, you're famous.
I don't know, but yeah, I suppose. But like technically wouldn't it be anyone who like sang and wrote their own songs.
Right.
I'm just quibbling with the genre now. But yeah, dude, I don't know. I listen to, I guess that's pretty trite. Like, I guess a lot of people are like, I listen to everything. Yeah. But I feel like I really do. I mean, I definitely have like my fallback genres before you, when you were, I'll like put a little behind the magic here. When you left for 10 minutes to go make a coffee, I was talking to producer Dylan about this year in review. And I was saying that mine is always like, it's never a surprise because I kind of only listen to the same 40 songs.
Yep.
Over and over and over. Like if a new album comes out, someone I like, yeah, I'll give it a spin. But I find I just, as I get older, I just revert back to faves more than anything else.
Yeah, I'm currently looking at my, so Apple doesn't do a Wrapped. They just give you like a, your top songs by year type thing. And every single year since 2015, my number one, like my top songs have been songs from albums released decidedly before the year in which they're being played a lot. Like I don't have anything new ever. My first like 30 songs from this year are all old songs from albums made in either 2020 or before. I have one album from a band called Telethon that was pretty regularly listened to by me. Other than that, it's just, oh yeah, let's just replay this old punk album from 2010 that I like. I have a very, like, I'm glad I don't get the Spotify Wrapped thing because I feel like I would feel like a bit of a normie with my musical tastes, and I don't need that pressure.
Oh, but you can't look at it like that. Sometimes it's way off, you know? Sometimes it's like it gave me a song that I just started recently listening to that friends of mine made that I forgot they'd made like 10 years ago. Uh-huh. And I started listening to it again because I'm like, oh, this song is really good. But it was like, this is your most binged song this year. I was like, that's not true. This is recency bias. So there's flaws in the system.
Yeah, I mean, one of my top 20 songs from the past year is the Planet Earth 2 suite from Hans Zimmer. Just like throw that on a lot and listen to it while I'm playing video games or whatever. There's some weird ones in here. Yeah. Katie, I don't listen to very eclectic music. It's like soundtracks of classical music set to nature shows or punk songs or The Lonely Island. That's basically where I'm at. So that was fun. What do you think's on Rasheed Wallace's Spotify Wrapped?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, that's tricky. What's he listening to? I could see him listening to some old soul. I could see him listening to... like, I feel like East Coast hip hop in the late 90s, early 2000s, probably. Yeah. What else? I'm trying to think of like new music he'd like. I think also Rasheed would surprise you.
Yeah, I think he'd probably have a bit of a bizarre mix. He might have some Hans Zimmer podcasts. On there. Yeah, yeah.
Like he's probably listening to some news podcasts, you know? Keeping up with the times on all his walks and stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably right. Also, the Roots are from Philly. I would imagine the Roots are probably in the mix there, you know, loyal to the people from your town.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that feels like a good place to lead us into the rest of today's show, Katie. There's not really a pivot point from Spotify Wrapped into basketball, but hey, here we are. On today's show, Katie, we are going to talk about a couple of things that are really piquing my interest and yours so far this season. In particular, we're going to talk about some rookies. We haven't really touched on the rookie class in the NBA so far. And last night, I was at the Raptors-Grizzlies game in Toronto, and I was really just taken aback by how cool Scottie Barnes is as he was trying to do like no-look dunks and was taunting Steven Adams on the fast break and potentially almost giving the ball away instead of scoring. He's very cool, as it turns out. He does no-look passes. He tries no-look dunks. He does lots of dunks where he is looking and then connects on them. He's hitting threes now. And he just is like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to how cool the rookies are in the NBA this season. Evan Mobley's back after missing a few games injured. He continues to be awesome. You've got guys kind of further down the draft board who have been really effective too. I'm digging the rookies this year, Katie. So we're going to talk about the rookies and what we've enjoyed about this class. Maybe some of our favorite all-time rookie seasons as well. And then in the segment we're trying out this week, Katie, we are going to dig into a topic that is very near and dear to my heart. And that is... League Pass in-arena feeds. I've really fallen back in love this year, Katie, with watching games on League Pass and really just kind of hanging out and waiting for the halftime shows and the in-between commercial breaks, because the stuff that goes on in arenas is a wide range of good to bad, everything in between. And we're going to run through some of our favorite, most recurring League Pass in-arena feed tropes, game ops tropes, if you will, and determine whether or not they're good in a game that we're going to call Halftime Show or Halftime Woe. Yes, it's a very good name. That's all coming up. We got our posters of the week as well, and a whole bunch more coming up on today's episode. But let's get to it. We're going to talk rookies in just 1 second. All right, Katie, it is time now to get into the thing we're talking about this week. And that thing this week is rookies in this year's NBA. It has been a very, very fun rookie class. It's been one of the stories of the season so far. It has been a true delight to watch these guys night to night do their thing. We are, of course, are very lucky. We get to watch Scottie Barnes in our very own backyard with the Raptors. He's leading all rookies in scoring right now. He's now shooting threes a whole bunch. He throws down cool dunks. He does no-look passes. He does everything very awesome. And then you've got Evan Mobley and Jalen Green and Kate Cunningham and Franz Wagner and Chris Duarte and Josh Giddey all the way on down. Lots of cool rookies this year, Katie. It seems like an inordinate amount of rookies, and it gets me really excited because we've talked a little bit, you know, kind of through the playoffs last season in particular, about how the league seems to be in this bit of like a transitional period, kind of handing off the keys to the league from the LeBron era into an era where there's not really a clear number one sort of center of the league type guy. There's just a lot of really good ass players, and it feels like this rookie class is going to continue to add to that. What have been your overall impressions of the rookie class so far this season? Do you have anything that's really stood out? Any particular guys that you've enjoyed watching?
They're nice. I think probably what's struck me the most and what makes me actually happiest is that with keeping in mind how messed up of a season last year's rookies had,
yeah,
you know, and like they didn't really get a lot of these familiar beats in terms of their general introduction to the NBA and their NBA careers. And I actually think a lot of them kind of suffered from that. Probably personally, I think their careers as well, like a lot of them are, you know, making up ground. I mean, we have one example again in our own backyard of that, I think, you know, with Malachi Flynn. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see this kind of return to the familiarity of what a rookie usually gets and goes through. So it's been really nice to see that. And then I also just generally think it's a really hopeful class to me. I mean, every rookie class is very helpful to me. But more than that, I don't know, again, this might just be my feed and who I talk to, but it feels like I'm seeing less of this, like, so-and-so is terrible or so-and-so is like, was too high a pick or so-and-so is like not working out. You know what I mean? Like the kind of naysaying of rookies, even though it's only December, beginning of December now, and like the season's just been going for basically a month and a half. So I think that's nice, and I hope that keeps up. I really do. But I like this rookie class, and I also feel like a lot of rookies this season, the higher picks landed on teams that could and needed to utilize them right away. So, and they're all actually like really up for the challenge.
Yeah, it just seems like, and this feels like it's been a thing in recent years with how, you know, like Ja Morant, for example, took him, you know, his rookie season basically to become a star. And, you know, Luka Doncic was really good early on. And this isn't everybody, but it does feel like by and large, guys are coming into the NBA like more ready to be effective, you know, probably, you know, just the mix of kind of, you know, the build up to the NBA career and the prep that goes in and the AAU schedules they play for their entire lives. Like it probably just primes you for NBA duty a little bit quicker. And it's just been really cool to see guys who like typically you know, I usually don't care about rookies, Katie. Like, usually, and like, this is probably informed by the fact that, you know, I've been a Raptors fan and they have not really had a lot of like flashy rookies in recent years. And it's been more of a slow build for their guys. And then year two, three, four, they kind of, you know, reach their form. And, you know, that's kind of always been my approach to rookies is, oh, well, that team, I'll care about that team in a couple of years. You know, they have a couple interesting rookies now, but I don't really care all that much. That's not the case with this year's rookie class. Like, it feels like these guys are tangibly impacting things. And yes, most of them are still on teams that are not winning a ton of games, you know, between Barnes, Mobley, Jalen Green, Cade Cunningham, Franz Wagner, Chris Duarte. Like, the leading rookies in the NBA are all on teams that are not winning a ton of games at the moment, but they feel like they're more important to the sort of recipe for those teams than you would typically see from a, from an average rookie, which is really cool. And I think just like the brazenness of a lot of these rookies too feels pretty great. Like, I mentioned Scotty Barnes and his like staring down the defense. Lebon Osman from the Toronto Star tweeted a little mashup of all of the times Scotty Barnes has looked back at the defense while on a breakaway this season. It was freaking awesome. Go watch it. I retweeted it last night from Lebon. But you know, you've got that. You've got Evan Mobley just like clearly being the best player on the Cavs already and like kind of knowing it, which is awesome. Even Jalen Green's playing for a miserable Rockets team. And, you know, I don't know how much you can really fault him for what's going on there. That team is a nightmare. Their owner's terrible. Steven Silas is like being unfairly blamed. There's a lot going on. But Jalen Green still just kind of has that like, well, I'm still going to, you know, I might shoot 6 of 15 or 6 of 20, but those 6 that I make are going to be directly in your eye and I'm going to let you hear about it. That's great. And then like Franz Wagner is like a badass who I did not expect as well. Chris Duarte is like one of the best scorers on the Pacers at the moment. Like, there's just like a readiness and a like, I'm not scared of you, fuck you attitude to a lot of these guys that I think is amazing. Do you have, you know, obviously Scotty Barnes we're partial to, but do you have any particular favorites from this crew to watch and sort of take in from a night-to-night basis?
I think I've warmed up to Giddy, who I thought was a little bit bratty initially, yeah. But I've warmed up to him. I do like Kuminga, though he's not really getting as much time just by virtue of where he's playing and he's doing... I don't know if they officially have him on a two-way, but he does have some G League assignments. But I like him and I like his attitude toward like everything. I really like Cade because I feel like in some ways, I mean, Cade is performing incredibly, but he is also, again, on a team that I really liked it when the Pistons were here and Casey was talking about him and he was just saying, you know, like that night, I think he'd only scored... Like, he didn't score that many points. And he was like, you know, there would be guys who have been in the league years and return that kind of stat line and be a little bit, you know, upset or like bummed out in themselves and be like, this is nothing to celebrate. He was like, you know, but Cade's back in there in the locker room, congratulating everybody, really excited, but like mostly for everyone else. But he looks at his number and he's like, I did all right. But like, that's not the focus for him. Mm-hmm. And I think this goes back to what you were saying, like not just this class, but certainly in the last 5 years, we're just seeing this kind of real-time evolution of what it means to be a rookie in the NBA and to be already so fully formed, not just as an athlete, but to a degree, like as people, you know, and just be really savvy about what it is they're going into, which I think is partially due to a lot of undue pressure. But I also think it sets them up for success in a different way. I just think they're so much more self-aware, these guys. A lot of them are looking into things like, you know, like deals, I guess, you know, like they're looking at like whether it's fashion deals or shoe deals or like lifestyle or like kind of everything. They're looking at partnerships a lot earlier, I think, which, and I'm not saying like, I don't mean that that should be the focus, but I think there's already this sense of looking at your time in the NBA as being a springboard, even to look past your time in the NBA, right? And to like set yourself up. Set yourself up to reap the benefits of it. Cause like these guys also don't know how long their careers are going to be and they're just getting into it. And I think that takes a lot of maturity, right? To like look look to this thing, you don't want to come for a very long time, the end of your NBA career, but to already start thinking about it. So yeah, I think it's just like a completely different generational shift in the way that rookies approach their NBA careers overall. And I think it's just like a really cool thing to watch.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to see it all play out. And you know, in terms of some of my individual favorites, I got to say, mm-hmm. I too was very, soft on the idea of, oh, Josh Giddey, this like baby-faced Aussie, like I'm good. I don't need like young Joe Ingles in my life. I got enough Joe Ingles. But no, he's fucking awesome. And he throws insanely cool passes. And he's averaging 10, 7, and 6 as a rookie. Like, that is pretty wild on a very bad team where there aren't really a lot of assists to be had because he's passing to, I don't even know on the Thunder, frankly. It's a lot of, like, Alexei Pokuševski and all that. Like, seeing Giddey, like, already kind of take up the mantle of, like, cool, fun playmaker is very exciting, mm-hmm. even if that team sucks. And that even extends too to Alperen Şengün in Houston. Like, all these guys on bad teams. Normally it's just like, oh, gotta not watch this bad team. The Rockets, unwatchable garbage. But if you watch the Rockets, you might see Alperen Şengün throw a behind-the-back pass out of the post. And it's just like, rookies should not be doing this type of thing, but they are in greater numbers each year, and it's truly wonderful. We're seeing a lot of second-round dudes do some stuff as well, Katie. Mm-hmm. Jeremiah Robinson-Earl mm-hmm. leads all second-round picks right now in scoring among rookies for the Oklahoma City Thunder. Herb Jones has been great for the Pelicans. He's like starting games for them, I think, now. Ayo Dosunmu has been like a local hero for the Chicago friends of ours who, he went to Illinois. He's from Chicago. Now he's like driving their second unit and running like a madman whenever he's on the floor. That's been great to see. Delano Banton, of course, in Toronto has been a little rougher lately, but certainly a fan favorite already and is, you know, a wonderful story. It's just been really cool to see guys taken later in this draft. And look, I am very skeptical when it comes to the whole, oh, this draft could be great thing, because oftentimes it just never works out as like much as the draft people want it to. I think back to like the Andrew Wiggins draft, for example, where it's like, well, obviously like Wiggins is going to be, you know, the next Michael Jordan, and this entire like Julius Randle, Marcus Smart, this whole crew, this is going to be like the best draft of all time. They ended up being great and fine in their own way, but it was always an unfair sort of burden to put on those guys coming out. But like this class was branded as all-time good, and it already seems like it's all-time good, Katie, and it's too early to get ahead of ourselves, but I think it's fair to get pretty excited about where a lot of these guys could end up as the as we progress here in the next few seasons. As far as like let's maybe take a look back, Katie, at some of our other favorite rookie seasons and try to like find some comparisons to the stuff we've enjoyed this year. Like Scottie Barnes, I think for me is clearly my favorite rookie to watch. Obviously bias built in there. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think back to like, have I enjoyed watching a rookie this much ever, either for my own team or for another? And I'm having a hard time coming up with one. Do you have one in mind, like a favorite rookie season that you kind of latched onto as, oh yeah, this guy really is like appointment viewing immediately out of the gate?
I think I really liked Jared Allen's draft. I don't even remember which year that was. 2019? No, 2017? Yeah, because 2019 was Zion.
Yeah, and 2017 draft.
Yeah. I really liked that one. I also think that a lot of players in that draft have, become like better and more fulfilled probably than what they were like projected to be. I hate like, you know, I like this is difficult for me because I kind of hate this framing of drafts and players to be like, what was a successful draft? What wasn't? Because it's like, I don't know. How do you view success in a draft? Like, how to you is success going to bear out? To me, it's which draft is going to give you the most players who have the longest and fulfilling NBA careers. Sure, and you can't actually decide that until those careers are done. So yeah. A lot of this stuff is still in progress, right? I mean, to me, why I like the Jared Allen draft is because a lot of those players are still in the league, but they've adjusted. Like Kyle Kuzma went 27th, you know, and like, look what he's doing now. OG was in that draft too, right? Like there's, oh, Frank Jackson was in that draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Your fave. Yeah.
Great. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like any draft, there's also a lot of guys who you don't see them anymore.
Yeah.
But that's where I kind of feel, oh, Bam was in this draft, you know, like De'Aaron
this
Fox.
It's a crazy draft, actually, now looking at it. Like,
yeah, Tatum.
Not
Josh
at all
Jackson,
in like
Lonzo.
The order of what you would expect, but.
No. And I mean, yeah. That's how it always goes. Like, that's why yeah. I like and also hate looking back at drafts because when you start to think, like, oh, this guy went first and like now, kind of now, where are they? And it's always the guys around the middle who seem to like branch out and pad out their career because they're like, you know what? I have to, by default of where I was drafted, learn a ton more skills and try and round out my game and just be like all the more useful and attractive to other teams, which is like good on them, but it's still one of the like faults of the draft, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, I look at that draft and it makes me pretty happy because a lot of those guys are still around and they're still really good and they've gotten better. Like they have gone beyond where they were, quote, like projected, you know, to end up based on their draft number.
Totally. Yeah. For me, if I'm looking back at like favorite rookies, not even necessarily like full seasons from entire rookie classes, just like individual rookie seasons. Like I'm always good. I think going to go back to Jaws rookie season. Like that guy, I'm so sad he's injured. He is the coolest player alive right now, I think. He is just a delight. And his rookie season, he was so good immediately on a team that had no business being as good as it ended up being. And it just kind of like it refreshed that Grizzlies team in such a way that, you know, they'd obviously gone through the wonderful grit and grind era and then, you know, they looked like they maybe were set up for a bit of a spell of tough luck. And then all of a sudden they get the lotto luck, they get Morant. And then it's just this new version of the Grizzlies that is equally as exciting and fun as the previous entirely different iteration of the team. I love when teams can kind of thread that needle a little bit. And it might be what's going to happen here with the Raptors and Scottie Barnes, honestly, right? Like they were obviously kind of, you know, they fell on hard times due to the pandemic more than anything else last season. And they kind of lucked their way. They obviously went up in the draft lottery to 4-2. And it feels like with the way Barnes has played so far, it kind of is potentially that thread from one era to the next. And I just think Scottie kind of has that chance. And I will always go back to that Ja Morant rookie season where we ended up seeing him in the bubble and everything. And it was just kind of this like, whoa, okay, this guy's here and this guy is going to be one of the coolest players in the league for the next 10 years. And we know this immediately from seeing him for 2 minutes. It's just a pretty cool sensation when you see that. So that's an all-timer. Also, Charlie Villanueva's rookie season. for going Raptors-centric, that was a fun one as well. Not a lot of great rookie seasons in Raptors history to pull from, unfortunately. Either way, Katie, that feels like a good place to leave our talk about rookies to move into our talk about game ops, baby. We're going to run through some of our favorite and least favorite tropes from NBA in-arena game feeds that we often see on NBA League Pass. That's all coming up in just 1 second. All right, Katie, we've reached the segment we're trying out this week, a segment that I am calling Halftime Show or Halftime Whoa. This is a game all about NBA game ops practices that are often seen through the lens of NBA League Pass and the in-arena feeds that occupy the commercial breaks. Katie, this is one of my favorite things about watching basketball. This is a thing that I really, really didn't realize how much I missed when we had the bubble where there were no halftime shows or no League Pass. And then we had the season last year where, you know, attendance was either limited or non-existent. You had very little in the way of in-arena entertainment. And it just was not, halftime shows were not on their shit last year. They're back to their old bullshit this year in a lot of ways. Obviously, still some restrictions here and there. But, I've been seeing the stuff that you love. You're seeing the kiss cams. You're seeing the baby cams. You're seeing the dance packs and all that stuff going on. at these games during these intermission breaks. And Katie, I wanted to talk to you about some of your favorites of these. You know, have you been enjoying this as part of your League Pass experience this season? And then we're going to run through some specific ones and going to determine whether or not it's good or bad by calling it a halftime show or a halftime whoa. Katie, let's begin with your thoughts on the in-arena feeds, League Pass, minutia, that type of stuff. Have you been enjoying having it back in your life in a profound way this season?
I don't have League Pass.
No!
but I guess I get some of the in-arena feeds when I steal streams illicitly to watch. So yeah. I know what you're talking about. I don't see them as much.
Yeah, it's just not it's not sanctioned.
One of the things
in arena feed. Yeah.
No, it's not sanctioned. One of the things I actually like the best, this is deviating from your segment. But I really like the commercials when you get a feed that's somewhere else, like the local feed.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The last, I think the when the Raptors played the Warriors, I had the Bay Area feed. And just, I was kind of mesmerized by the commercials, especially because the commercials you get when you're watching TSN or SportsNet, if you're watching a Raptors game, it's just the same shit over and over. So just, I think to have different stuff is kind of nice. But yeah, like, I don't know. I do like looking at the crowds. I do like seeing if they are very different, which cities kind of freak me out a little bit, which cities feel more familiar by virtue of like the makeup of the crowd. Mostly the crowds that are like extremely all white or like what the demographics are. And also, I look now to be like, who's wearing masks? Oh, I guess this is a state that they're not doing that anymore.
Yeah, there's nothing to really expose the caucasity of a town like a dance cam. Here's Salt Lake City. Here's your dance cam. And then it's just the cringiest minute and a half of your life. And I fucking soak every inch of it up. It's fantastic. I also am a big fan, Katie, of you make mention of like the local commercials and stuff that you see. That used to be a staple of League Pass. They have since removed those commercials from your League Pass viewing. Or it might have been when I used to watch like on my parents' old Super Sports Pack or something like that. Either way, the one that really stands out to me, do you recall the Anthony Davis Special Man commercial?
No.
Okay, I'm going to try to find this, and I'm going to send it to producer Dylan, and hopefully producer Dylan can play it for us. It's Anthony Davis impersonating like an old like local commercial with this furniture salesman called the Special Man, and he like dresses up. It's like very wild. I got to find it here. It's so good.
The New Orleans Pelicans are having a sale.
Right now, pick any three games for as low as $24.
I want to go to the Clippers, Thunder, and Bulls.
You have to see the Special Man.
Let him have it. With no problem.
Say I say. Get your Pelicans three-game plan today. See the Special Man.
I got the $24.
Let him have it. With no problem.
I got it. With no problem.
The many, many different tropes of game ops that we've seen. I mean, we see this when we cover the Raptors as well. We are part of the in-arena feed at times, just watching the Raptors game unfold in person. And so we have a pretty good handle on what goes on in between the whistles and while the commercials are running. Let's run through some of our favorite tropes, some of the most recurring bits and segments that you'll see, and we will determine whether or not they are good or bad. Let's do it, shall we, Katie? Let's begin with baby races. This is one that I don't think has really made too much of a comeback yet because of COVID, but I think we'll probably start seeing it too soon in your Indianas and Salt Lake cities of the world, I would guess. Feels like that's going to come back into vogue. Baby races, of course, typically pit three or four babies against one another. Their parents will usually be on the floor. One will be at the starting line with the baby, and the other parent will be at the finish line. And it's essentially which baby crawls to their parent fastest wins. Katie, are you a fan of baby races? Halftime show or halftime woe for baby races?
They're okay. I know you love these.
They're really
good. Can I put them in the middle? Do I have to say, like,
halftime
I love
so
more,
so?
I hate them.
Halftime
yeah,
so so.
That's,
yeah.
How's that? Yeah.
that works. Yeah. We've landed on a third option here. That's totally fine. Yeah, what's your hang up with them? What keeps you from totally buying in?
I mean, I like it when there's like one baby that it just rejects the whole idea of what's happening, or when they just kind of go to the middle and stop, or they interfere with the other babies. So I guess I like that kind of baby, the baby that goes off the rails. But for the most part, I mean, I understand why they've also stopped in the pandemic.
Yeah.
But I always think of the person whose job it was to round up all those babies. I suppose we could find this out easily. Like, do they keep a list on hand?
Yeah.
But then the babies get older. Like? Yeah. Like they must age out of candidacy. Right. So like, how do they? And I don't know. That's the stuff I think about. I guess like the organizational stuff part of the event itself, which is just due to work experience.
Well, now I'm imagining it as like a, like there's like a circuit for baby races, and like the NBA halftime show is the big leagues, and then there's like lower level. It's kind of like F1, where the, you know, F1 is where it matters, and then, you know, below you got F2, you've got F3, you've got the sort of the feeder leagues that lead up into the best of the best end up in the F1 circuit. And so I wonder if that's like you go to different G League games or high school games around a particular city. Are there like qualifier races for the babies to get into the big leagues of the NBA halftime show? I'm hoping there's like an underground baby race world now. That would be good. Fast and Furious 11. Let's go. I too am with you on the chaos. I don't love like a cleanly raced baby race. It's fine. It's still cute, but give me two babies like locking eyes at the starting line and then just going to become friends and not racing. That works for me as well. It's the same idea as like to bring up F1 again. F1 races in the rain are always a lot of fun because it leads to chaos. A straight F1 race where there's not a lot of opportunity for passing and the weather is fine and there's not really any sort of drama, not so much for me. But give me the chaos in a baby race. We go to a similar form here, Katie, with the next one. Dog races. These happen all the time. These are usually a little bit more like chaos free. The dogs are there to fucking race and nothing else. What is your overall view on dog races at halftime shows?
Is this like when they have super dogs or is this its own thing?
It's like, let me
find. Is this civilian dogs?
I think it's civilian dogs, but
okay.
Let's see if I can find like a good example here. Like very good dog star in halftime show in Toronto. That's I don't want to watch this video on Facebook, but yeah, these dogs, I'm looking at it now. They got their ankles taped up. They look like they're like pretty attuned to racing, but and they're all different dogs. Like it does seem like it's dogs who are from the street. Like they're civilian dogs. They're different shapes and sizes. You got small dogs big dogs all over the place. Dogs from the street. Yeah, Lady and the Tramp dogs just all up in here. But no, it does seem like there's like some training that goes on, but I don't think it's like these are pros. I think they may be semi-pro at the most.
So I guess for me, this is going to be halftime. I don't know. I've never seen it.
You've never seen one in Toronto? They've definitely done them in Toronto a few times in person.
I've seen like super dogs in Toronto.
Right. Okay.
The franchise that usually you see at the Royal Winter Fair, but I've not seen civilian dogs.
Gotcha. Fair enough. I'm going to go with halftime show. I love a dog race. It's highly compelling. You get some good dogs. There's nothing wrong with it to me. Let's go to the next. This is actually the halftime show at the Raptors game last night. Youth basketball games, Katie. Oftentimes you will see some children play some basketball. It can lead to all sorts of hijinks. It can also lead to a whole lot of missed shots and very little in the way of baskets. Where are you at on youth basketball games as a halftime show? Is it a halftime show? Halftime, whoa. Halftime, I don't know. Halftime, so. We have so many different options now, Katie. It's unbelievable.
Actually, I kind of like these. I'll say it's halftime show, but I like it when they're really young and they can't, and like they don't lower the nets for them.
Yeah.
and no one can get a basket.
Yeah, it kind of becomes like a soccer game where each basket feels monumental and like it could decide the game. I love the little crowd chant you get when they do score. It's always a nice little, that's got to be pretty cool, even though it's like a half filled crowd as people are out getting concessions and using the washroom. Like, you get the nice cheers when they do score. And then sometimes you get a kid who's like clearly auditioning for the team that is playing the real basketball game that night. like last night, there is a kid who was like probably a foot taller than everybody else that he was playing with on his team. And he put up more shots than I think anyone has ever put up in one of these youth basketball halftime shows. Just completely tunnel visioned, like full on, like, I'm not passing to anybody. This is my time to shine. I respected the shit out of it. He didn't really score. He had a couple air balls, didn't score at all. But I really liked the gumption of this kid to just kind of take the bull by the horns and try to show out for the scouts that were in attendance. It was fun, some fun energy. So I'm going to go halftime show as well. Let's go to not really a halftime show. This is more of an in-between quarters gimmick, but like, we got three different types of cams that come up, Katie. I guess the classic old one is the Kiss cam. Are you a fan of the Kiss cam? Halftime show or halftime whoa?
I know I'm not supposed to be. Like, I know people are like, why haven't we gotten rid of the Kiss cam yet?
Yeah.
It's problematic, but I guess you gotta cancel me because I don't mind it.
Yeah, I mean, certainly there are some non-inclusive elements of it. There's a lot of presumptiveness that goes on in putting two people on camera and asking them to kiss. My hope is that some like research goes in ahead of time. Maybe they ask people if they want to be featured on the Kiss cam or something like that. I think I am going to go halftime so-so on this, because when the Kiss cam's good, it's good. All the bits have been sort of, you know, used at this point, right? Like, there's nothing new in Kiss cam tomfoolery. It's like you have a nice kiss with your partner. Maybe you get like a really nice old couple. It's nice and wholesome. And then maybe they kind of go a little hard at it and it's pretty funny. Or you get like the dude with the lady friend, the camera pans to them and the dude kisses and or chugs his beer instead. That's a fun one once in a while, but it feels like everybody does it at this point, and so I'm a little tired of it. So I guess I'm looking for some innovation in the world of being on the Kiss cam, Katie, but for the most part, you get some good moments, and I would hope that there is at least some thoughtfulness as to the inclusiveness of it all beforehand as well, but I don't know if there is. Let's move on, Katie. The dance cam. We already mentioned the dance cam and how cringy it can be. Are you a fan of the dance cam? Halftime show or halftime whoa?
Yeah, this is a show all the way. Because Even when it's bad, it's very funny. The only thing I actually don't like is when kids are doing Fortnite dances, because I feel like it's sad to me because that's what most kids just know how to do. Yeah. But I am always still amazed that they can do the floss so well, because I can't. I've tried so many times and I can't do it. So when they just kind of robotically do those dances, it both bums me out, but I am impressed. My favorite guy is that older man at Raptors games with he's little. They always show him, and he's just like slowly doing all these kinds of moves. He has new moves like every single game, but whenever they do a dance cam, they will pan to him. And whenever they're like, we're gonna have a contest, it's like no contest. He always wins, I think. Because he doesn't. He both takes it seriously, but he also doesn't seem to give a shit. And I think it's the dance cam is the worst when it's someone who's taking it extremely seriously and you can feel the awkwardness of that. But dance cam, that's a halftime show to me.
Yeah, I don't need you to be earnest in your dance cam appearance. Like, be silly, be over the top, be cringy, and don't take it too seriously, I think, is the way to go. But I agree, halftime show for dance cams, in all of its form, good and bad, it's entertaining as hell. We're gonna come now to this is my favorite, and it's kind of a newer addition, Katie, the Simba cam. If you're unfamiliar, this is when they pan to babies, and then the people holding the baby have to lift the baby up as though they're Simba at the beginning of The Lion King. Are you a fan of the Simba cam, halftime show or halftime whoa?
I do like it. I was going to say, I like when people hold their babies up during the dance cam.
Yeah.
I also like it when people use their babies really blatantly to get prizes.
Yeah, yeah, hell yeah.
Like when they're used doing like t-shirt tosses, they'll just kind of thrust their baby up which is very funny to me.
Yeah.
And it usually works, so kudos to them. I haven't actually seen this, but it is something I think I'd like, so we can go show for that.
Yeah, it's making its way. It's becoming a little bit more mainstream. You know, I think just a few teams were kind of doing it for a while there. I think the Spurs do it pretty regularly. I hope we see it more often in all arenas because it is it never fails. It features cute babies and people looking for attention on camera. There's really no way you can go wrong. Let's go to another halftime show, Katie. This one I think is going to be a polarizing one. There's a guy in the NBA who I don't think his name is actually Simon. I think it's like Dave or something like that. But he plays Simon Says, which is, of course, the fun childhood game of obedience. Are you a fan of the large group Simon Says games? I don't think this one's come back yet with COVID. There's just too many people on the floor for it. But I would imagine it's going to make its comeback within the next year or so. I don't know what this guy's been doing in the time during COVID. I hope he's doing okay. I hope his business is still thriving. But the Simon Says guy, Katie, halftime show or halftime woe?
The way you described Simon Says, though, first, the childhood, the fun childhood game of obedience.
Yep.
Yikes. I feel like there's a lot to unpack there. We won't do that today. Sean's childhood. I don't know. Isn't the guy a jerk? Like, wasn't there something about the Simon Says man?
Oh, no. Did he get canceled?
Is it always the same man? I don't know if he got canceled, but like, I've heard from multiple people that they don't like his vibe or something. So
Steve Max is his name. Again. That's his name. Steve Max.
Okay. Let me see this guy's face.
See, the thing with Steve Max is he, like, I think he's like abrasive when he plays the game. Oh, by the way, he did the Dallas Mavs game two nights ago. So, and last night.
Okay. He looks like pretty intense.
Yeah, he's an intense guy. He takes Simon Says extremely seriously, and he's not afraid to like make fun of people when they fuck up. But I think that's part of the appeal. I like to see people who are on the court, very excited to be on the court for a halftime show, get embarrassed in front of 20,000 people. It's awesome. And he really, I think, leans into that. And yeah, there have been teams that have done it. He did Milwaukee on the 24th. He did the Mavs on the 29th. He did the Texas A&M Aggies last night as well. So he's been going all around. He's making it happen. So I'm pretty pro Simon Says. I know he rubs people the wrong way. I know it's kind of a silly, like not all that entertaining halftime show, I guess, if you're looking for more sort of high flying dunks and stuff like that. But he's a real bastard and I like it, Katie.
This is a halftime so-so.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't think it's for everybody. That's cool, but I am 100%. Mm-hmm. This is halftime show with an exclamation point, frankly, for me. Let's go. There's one that I have on the list here, or did not include on the list here, that I want to run by you. What do you think of the halftime shows where they bring in like a rapper from the area or not, and they perform for a half-filled crowd at center court? Halftime show or halftime woe? This happened with Lupe Fiasco to start the Raptors season. I think this happens in Atlanta a lot now that I think about it. Just thinking of markets where this often takes place. Atlanta comes to mind. New Orleans comes to mind. Where are you at with rappers or any musical performance, frankly, at halftime in front of a half-filled bowl?
Well, I loved it when I saw Thrust at halftime at the Raptors because I always think about Thrust and what he's up to. So it was really cool to see him on like a Wednesday night. And then who did I see also? I was pretty disappointed when Lupe Fiasco played the home opener because he didn't fucking play Kick Push.
No, he did not.
And like what else? Like, why are you there, dude?
Also, Drake was literally sitting courtside for that game. Like, of any game, the return to Toronto game.
Maybe he was embarrassed. Maybe he was embarrassed, and that's why he didn't want to do Kick Push. What's that song? Fuck. What's that song? Who sings This Is How We Do It? Montel?
Montel Jordan?
Is Montel Jordan? Yeah, Montel Jordan. I also saw at a Raptors game and it was like a Tuesday night. And when that was great because he was like, this is how we do it. It's Tuesday night. So I really enjoyed that. I have to say, for the most part, I have liked rappers doing halftime shows.
Yeah, I think the rappers had Raekwon once, and they get Maestro Fresh West like 4 times a year, it seems. And those
and
are the
I
ones
like
that,
Cardinal. Yeah. I know he's corny, yeah. But I like yeah. him.
Yeah, I like the more local you can get, the better to me. Like, I like it when they have Maestro Fresh West and Cardinal. Like, lean into the Toronto of it all, I think. And yeah, I like that it can sometimes be the theater of the uncomfortable, where it's just like, is anybody watching this? Does anybody care? Is this like the saddest this artist's career is going to get? Is this the depths that we've reached? But when it's good, it's good. And it is kind of cool. And it's a nice bit of clout to like, oh yeah, Lupe Fiasco's in town tonight. He's just doing the halftime show and you get a free show. It's pretty cool. I guess it's not free. You're paying a lot of money to go to the game. Either way, let's go to a couple more here, Katie. A couple more of my faves. Let's go with the food cannon. This happens in Utah, Katie. They have a Gatling gun that has Chick-fil-A sandwiches that they shoot into the crowd. I don't know why this seems messy. See, Chick-fil-A can also fuck off, but do you like it when these arenas put food inside their cannons or Gatling guns and shoot it into the crowd?
Yeah, I think they should do more of that. I think they should repurpose those t-shirt cannons. They should put submarine sandwiches on, not Subway, because I hate it, but they should do, you could do Mr. Sub, you could find your local submarine local submarine maker. Put those in there. They're already designed for the cannon.
Yep.
I like that. I would like to see more of that. I'd like to see more weird things in the t-shirt guns. Maybe bananas.
healthy snacks. Yeah.
Apples. Yeah. Clementines when it gets to be closer to Christmas. And, they're in season now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to get myself some clementines when I go to the grocery store today.
Eggplants. Those really skinny Italian eggplants. There's a lot. Like baguettes. Yeah. You could do half baguettes. You could do full baguettes. There's a lot you could put in those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm fully on board. Yeah, definitely a halftime show. They should make it a full halftime show, just shooting various foods into the crowd. Just stop doing Chick-fil-A. And then lastly, Katie, also not in the rundown I gave you, but I do want to ask you about not mascot dunks, because I think we all agree that when mascots dunk, it is the ultimate halftime show. But when they just get like a troop of like acrobats out there dunking, some of them don't really have insane dunking chops. You'll get a lot of misses worked in, but it's just like an assembly line of dudes bouncing off trampolines and doing flips and dunking. Are you a fan of this as a halftime show? Do you find it gets monotonous, or are acrobatic dunks always in vogue?
No, I like that. I'm always impressed by those guys, especially when they do the finale, which is always the four guys that are doing it in a line and they pass the ball back and back and back. And then the last guy dunks, but they all do crazy flips. I just know how much they've had to practice to do that.
Mm-hmm. I'm almost more impressed when you see sometimes they'll like misjudge the jump or something and they can't dunk it. But then they just like calmly do a flip or two and land on their feet and it's fine. that to me is just as, if not more impressive than when they do connect, like the bodily control when you know you're kind of veering off track with a basketball rim in front of your face to not hit the rim, not like go totally like vertical or horizontal in your orientation and still land on your feet. That to me is about as cool as it gets. So yeah, I'm fully in halftime show for that as well. Katie, we'll keep an eye, of course, on future halftime shows throughout the NBA as we go forward here. But big time fan, and I'm really glad that it's a thing that's back in our lives this season after really one of the things that really was missing from last year was that extra in-between league pass minutia stuff. Let's get into the posters of the week now, Katie, shall we? To close out the show the way we finish every episode of the podcast, the best in NBA social media from the past 7 days. I will go first. For me this week, I'm going with Quentin Richardson, who posted a video of his kid, who has got to be like 7 years old and it is adorable, wearing a full-size DeMar DeRozan signed jersey that DeMar sent over. I guess the kid's a fan of the Bulls, fan of DeMar. DeMar obliged, sent over the jersey, and watching this small child in an adult's clothes never gets old. Very fun stuff. You know, very much in line with, I think, the using children to gain like goods at games in halftime shows and festivities. You know, I could see Quentin Richardson's kid at a game in this jersey that, you know, just kind of being used to get more stuff. It was good stuff. Very, very cute. And that is my poster of the week. Katie, what do you got?
Alphonso McKinney went, I guess when they were in Chicago, he went to a museum I didn't know existed called the Museum of Illusions in Chicago. And he went into a lot of really funny rooms. There was one room that looked like his beheaded head was on a plate being served at a table. There was another room where it was like a kaleidoscopic like mirror. Mm-hmm. And he was so happy. Like he was just beaming. And then it's just like hundreds of his face beaming. So that was really cool. There was another room where it looked like he was upside down or like climbing the wall, kind of. He just looked like he was having a really good time. I really like it when athletes like go and visit other cities and they go and do stuff in those cities, especially if they happen to be kind of like, I don't know, silly, kind of corny things. Mm-hmm. And he just looked like he was having so much fun.
That's a great one, Katie. Alphonso McKinney, haven't thought about that guy in a while. Glad he's on the Warriors, right? He's kicking around. Good. Happy for him. Happy for NBA champion Alphonso McKinney. That's going to do it for today's episode of the podcast, Katie. Thank you, as always, to those of you for listening in and tuning in and being our friends and our Patreon subscribers in particular. Those of you with our Patreon group, we are going to get you a mailbag episode shortly. We got to get those questions in, though, so please drop some questions into the Discord. We would very much like it if you would send us some, and we will answer those in the mailbag podcast that should be out in just a few days' time. You can go to patreon.com/abasketball if you would like to be privy to those mailbag episodes. You can subscribe. It's just $4 a month US, $5.50 Canadian to be part of our little Patreon family, and you get access to those mailbag episodes, ad-free versions of the main show, and access to our Discord chat. Very much appreciate you there. And as always, a huge thank you to producer Dylan. Katie, before we get out of here, anything you want to plug?
I'll plug Basketball Feelings. So I just put out a new Basketball Feelings podcast episode for paid subscribers there with Dave Dufour. We talked about fights, wrestling, coaching, and Dave was just walking around in Milwaukee the whole time.
You also wrote about Marc Gasol, Katie, and everyone. Oh, I did. Yeah, I did. That that went international, Katie. It was, I mean, very well done piece.
It did. Greece. Yeah. We had Spanish hits in Greece. I think we had some hits in Italy. It was good.
Wonderful. Yeah, go read Katie's Marc Gasol piece. Go read everything on Basketball Feelings. You can find me at Locked On Raptors doing a podcast every day about the Toronto Raptors. Lots of Scotty Barnes talk over there if you like the Scotty Barnes talk within this podcast. And that will do it for this week. We will talk to you again next week with another episode of Basketball. Bye-bye.